more segment at Raspberry's done, Blue's nearing the end, dozens of plums pinky purpling, there's almost too many ripe tomatoes. Mid-August and already feel the day is getting shorter. Been a mild month so far. As usual, the weather folk are saying could maybe be a little rain in a few days, just cause they know many of us would like some. Politicians are a lot like weather folk. They say what you want to hear, what you've been missing, but they're just after the ratings called votes. Besides being more earth-friendly, we can't change the weather, but maybe we can change how our city and country give us results, not forecasts. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Eliza Yerkob, Grant Button, Dan Raphael, Ken Jones, Josh Salem, Reed Johnson, and Zachary Jones-Nuray. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Kathleen Shannon, and Mike Moen. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Eliza Yerkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Ken Jones will be interviewing Elise Schumach from the Rose City Book Pub and Holly Miller from ALS Northwest about their upcoming event.
KABU News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Just a few weeks ago on KABU's News in Depth, we interviewed filmmaker Sandra Lucco about her new documentary, Vanishing: A Love Story. The film recounts the last 6 months in the life of Kai Emmons, Eugene-based author, screenwriter, and teacher. Kai was diagnosed in early 2021 with bulbar onset ALS, a debilitating disease which takes away the power of speech before affecting the rest of the body. Always a strong and independent woman, Kai chose to end her life 2 years later through Oregon's Death with Dignity program. There currently is no cure for ALS, but there's some very promising research and hope for future victims of the disease. Our in-depth guests today are helping to fund that research. Holly Miller, Development Director, Special Events and Corporate Relations at ALS Northwest, and Elise Schumach, owner of Portland's Rose City Book Pub, a participant in this month's Ales for ALS campaign. Holly and Elise, thanks for joining us live in the KABU studios.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Ken.
Well, Holly, let's talk first about ALS Northwest. We mentioned Kai Emmons. Your organization got its start after the death of another beloved Oregon artist, musician Richard Burdell, who died from ALS in 1998?
That's correct.
And how'd you go from what began then to where you are now as ALS Northwest?
It's grown over time. It became as a started as a very small organization of just a few people volunteering, and one of the volunteers was Lance Christian, who is now our executive director. So it's grown from a 2- and 3-person organization to an organization of 20. We serve about 600 patients living with ALS in Oregon and Southwest Washington.
I want to talk about that because I looked on the webpage, and the mission is twofold. Number one, to provide support and advocacy for people with ALS and their families, and two, to advance research for new treatments and hopefully a cure for ALS. Let's start with, what services do you offer to those 600 people who are currently living with the disease?
So the people who identify to our organization are helped as much or as little as they choose. Everyone's journey with ALS is different and personalized. So many times we come alongside them quickly from going to clinic visits with them, going and doing one-on-one visits with our social workers in their home to talk to them about the disease, the things that they need to know, things that they should be aware of in the home, and kind of coaching them along the way. We run support groups, not only for the person who's diagnosed with ALS, but those who care for them.
Yes, a very important part of it, because that's a lot of work and a lot of emotional.
It's a lot. It's a lot to manage the disease from start to finish. So we come alongside. We have support groups for the people living with ALS. We have support groups for their care providers. We also run bereavement support groups because we recognize the journey with ALS doesn't end with the passing of the person who was diagnosed. So we come alongside. We have a medical equipment loan closet, so we do a lot of medical equipment loans. It's a very expensive disease. There's a lot of equipment needed, so we run a loan closet that lets people use that equipment at no charge. And everything that our organization does is at no charge to the person living with ALS, nor their care provider. So we rely very heavily on the fundraising that we do.
How do people just come to you with ALS and request help, and ALS Northwest is there for them?
Yes. So if they're diagnosed at a clinic, the clinic refers them to our organization. And if they sometimes they come to us just on their, just naturally, they look us up on the website. So it's a variety of ways. Sometimes it's recommendations through a friend or a family member who has heard of us in the past.
Now to the second part of ALS Northwest mission, the funding for research into treatments and possible cures for the disease. Who gets the money and how do you make that decision? You have several labs and clinical studies, I think, that you contribute to?
So we contribute to a number of studies, and those decisions are made. Previously, they were made in conjunction with the national organization, the ALS Association. Now they're made in conjunction with a group called ALS United. So our organization made the decision to become a separate entity from the national organization, but joined with other chapters around the nation. So we do a little of our own investing with the guidance of our board of directors, and we also partner with ALS United to look at what are the up-and-coming research projects that are going on and how best to invest in them. But it's an incurable disease. There are very few treatments right now, so it's critical to keep investing in a cure or treatments in the short term.
And there are different types of ALS, like Kai Emmons had bulbar onset, and that had a projected lifespan of another 2-3 years at most. And yet there's people like Stephen Hawking, who has ALS, who's still alive, though with the aid of a lot of devices to help him speak and get around.
The average life expectancy once you've been diagnosed with ALS, which can sometimes take up to a year or two to accurately diagnose, is 2 to 5 years. But that's an average. So, of course, there's people who live much longer than that, and there's people who don't get to live that long. So we serve all of those people. We have patients who've been living with it for decades, and we have patients that are people that we serve that come alongside of them, and it's just a matter of months between getting to know them and their passing.
Now, I've read of some very promising results, and we talked a little bit before we sat down in front of the mics. You mentioned there was one study that was in clinical trials for medication, but it didn't quite work out. Are you seeing some other studies that might be a little bit more promising? Maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel for people who are suffering from this disease?
I think there's multiple studies out there that are doing great work and good things. We have one study right now that seems to be helping people who are diagnosed with genetic ALS. You have 10% of patients diagnosed with ALS have a genetic component. And so for those patients, there's a drug on the market right now that seems to be helping a bit.
So the money that's going to research, we're seeing results.
We're definitely seeing results. And, you know, the Ice Bucket Challenge is 10 years old this year.
Oh, that's right.
We just had an Ice Bucket Challenge celebration last weekend, kind of, you know, celebrating the success. All the money that the awareness that it raised and the money that it brought in has really helped move the needle. But we need that needle to keep going. So our organization works hard to make sure that there's awareness out there, there's community support for our patients, people living with ALS, and that we're advancing research.
Now, Elise, we've talked several times before about your Rose City Book Pub, which you started back in 2018. The pub sells used books and serves beer, wine, and food, which is a great combination, especially mm-hmm. in Portland. So we're grateful to you for thinking of this. And you host a variety of community events there, readings, live music, trivia night, book groups. This month, you're also helping fund ALS research as part of an Ales for ALS campaign. Can you tell us about Ales for ALS? You're partnering with a brewery, right, Balebreaker?
Yeah. So Balebreaker Brewery started this. They are a fourth-generation hop farmer family and first-generation brewers. And so their official program, I think, is usually in June, and they donate the hops to some of their regular customers and then ask those customers to donate the money they would have spent to ALS research and support. And so I've always liked carrying their beer, and I like what they stand for. And I'm trying to get back on track. I try to have at least one fundraiser every month. And so I planned this with Danny, my rep from Balebreaker. And we've done this every year, ever since I met the folks from Balebreaker. And so what we are doing is $2 from every Balebreaker beer all month long goes to ALS Northwest. And then also we had a bingo night, and the money from the bingo cards was going to go to that.
Oh, I was going to ask you how that went. Was it pretty packed for bingo night for ALS?
Well, you know, no, it wasn't.
It was a Monday night.
It's a Monday night in the summer, and any restaurant and bar knows that in the summertime it's sometimes hard to convince people to come in because they're at the coast or Hood River or any of the things happening at the waterfront. And so it wasn't very happening, but we had a good time, and the host had a blast, and people were there with, you know, good intentions and good spirits.
Yeah, I should mention also that Ales for ALS started in 2013, and it's raised more than $5.5 million for ALS research. Yeah. And even though you're partnering with Balebreaker as part of the Ales for ALS program, you have the opportunity to give the money, the funds that you collect this month, to an organization, and you've chosen Holly's organization, ALS Northwest.
Yeah, we have the discretion to choose any ALS organization. I think people largely give to ALS TDI, which is the one that Balebreaker suggests, but I think that they give people the flexibility to give to somebody local too. And Balebreaker is interesting because they're in the Yakima Valley, and that's where hops are grown for, you know, so many of the hops in America. And and currently I have three people that I love who have ALS. And
I was going to ask you about personal connections.
Yeah, and I've just supported this anyway. I mean, Balebreaker was doing it. I said, sure, sounds like a great program. But one of the people is my mom's childhood friend from the Yakima Valley. And my understanding, and I am not a professional, and maybe Holly knows better, but that there is some epigenetic evidence, and that there are regions and things like that where ALS is overrepresented. And I think that
Yakima Valley is one of them.
ALS and MS and a couple of other things that seem to have some things in common. And, you know, the other thing they grow there is apples, and apples are sprayed a lot. And so that's one of the guesses.
So it could be environmental connection rather than a genetic one in that case.
And then the second person that I love right now who has ALS is my childhood friend. And the possible epigenetics there was that their house had black mold. And so the first thing that they did was that they did a GoFundMe to raise money to get rid of the black mold, and then also to retrofit the house for his different mobility needs that are going to be coming up.
Well, Holly, as development director of ALS Northwest, you handle special events.
Mm-hmm.
And a big one's coming up next month, the annual fundraiser, Light the Way Gala and Live Auction. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we do a variety of events throughout the year. We have ski events, walk events, a ride, but we also do a gala auction dinner. So it'll be taking place on September 21st over at the Oregon Convention Center. They've been strong partners with us over the years. So we gather anywhere between 500, 600 people to come together for dinner. We have a silent auction, and then we have a live auction component. We also share a mission moment, making people aware of what ALS is and the impact of that on both the people living with it and those who take care of them.
Where can people find out more about ALS Northwest and Light the Way annual fundraiser and buy tickets if they'd like in advance? September 21st, coming up fast.
It's coming up really fast. I can't believe it. So you can go to ALS Northwest website, so Oregon, ALSOregon.org, and find a link to it there under our special event area. We have tickets on sale. It's $200 a person, or you can buy a table of 10 for $2,000. But it's a great night. Mm.
Well, Holly and Elise, thanks so much for joining us at KABU and for all the good work you're doing on ALS research and supporting the people who have it.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Holly Miller, Development Director, Special Events and Corporate Relations at ALS Northwest, and Elise Schumach, owner of the Rose City Book Pub in Northeast Portland. You can learn more about ALS Northwest and their annual fundraiser at alsoregon.org. And if you'd like to join in on Ales for ALS and have a beer or two for a very good cause, the Rose City Book Pub is located at 1329 Northeast Fremont in Portland. This is Ken Jones for KABU's News in Depth.
KABU News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KABU News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, about his latest article. It's called Oregon Congressional Democrats Contrast Local Rhetoric, Lead on Housing Initiatives. Senator Wyden, Representative Bonamici, and others urge Biden to act on affordable housing as local officials continue public space race to criminalize homelessness. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So this piece compares federal and local approaches to solving the homelessness and, by extension, the affordable housing crisis. You spoke to Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden and Representative Susan Bonamici. What is their take on the crisis and what should be done?
Yeah, Representative Bonamici and Senator Ron Wyden both talked to me about how jailing people, sending them to jail, just creates more barriers to them actually accessing housing. It's a common refrain that you hear these days, particularly in light of the Grants Pass v. Johnson decision, that has sort of pitted these ideas against each other. Do people need to be compelled into housing with jail and fines, or do we just need to simply provide more affordable housing? So they recognize and sent a letter actually to the Biden administration asking them, urging the Biden administration in light of that decision to invest in more affordable housing units across the nation and more shelter options for people who are experiencing homelessness.
And that's not all that they've done on this issue. What sort of legislation have Wyden and Bonamici introduced that are related to these interrelated crises?
Yeah, kind of most recently, you know, you and I spoke a couple weeks ago about Bonamici introduced the Turnkey Act, which is trying to fast track, you know, converting these underutilized buildings, a lot of government buildings, into shelters. Those can be done quickly, and they can, you know, give people the dignity that they deserve with, you know, single room occupancies, simply by buying motels, for instance, that are not being used and moving people in quickly for supportive services. you know, Wyden has kind of led on this for a while with through his DASH Act. It was introduced in 2021, the Decent, Affordable, Safe Housing for All Act. And that provides rental assistance for people, housing vouchers, tax credits for renters, just essentially kind of housing first policies that can help people both stay in their homes and or get into a home if they don't have one.
Where do some of Oregon's other representatives land on this issue?
Yeah, all of the congressional Democrats from Oregon, that's Jeff Merkley, Val Hoyle, Roe Blumenauer, you know, from both the House and the Senate, signed on to a letter that was sent July 12th urging the Biden administration to invest in these initiatives. Representative Andrea Salinas didn't sign that bill. Otherwise, we'd say that all congressional Democrats signed it. She just said that she didn't have a chance to review the letter before it was sent, and she wants to continue advocating for resources in Oregon. So this was joined actually by another 70 congressional Democrats across the United States. I can list all of the names, but I will not. But really a significant coalition of Democrats who are urging the Biden administration to invest in housing in light of this sort of threat of, you know, criminal penalties and barriers for people experiencing homelessness.
How does the rhetoric of, you know, representatives like Wyden, like Bonamici, how does their rhetoric and approach differ from elected officials that are a little closer to home?
They honestly couldn't be any more different. Some of the local rhetoric, and, you know, they weren't, this is me talking, you know, after interviewing them, they were really not ready to criticize local leaders. Local leaders face sort of different challenges maybe than congressional leaders do. Still, the solutions are the same. Local leaders, you know, we kind of dug into some of the ways that people talk about this, and the local leaders sound far closer to former President Donald Trump when talking about opening these parcels of land, bringing in service providers, psychiatrists and social workers, drug rehab specialists to create these tent cities. You know, you'll remember that former Mayor Sam Adams was in Ted Wheeler's office in 2022 and recommended a large tent encampment where people could access these services to be guarded by the National Guard. And they've continued with that similar approach. They've sort of cleaned it up a little bit in light of some, you know, better angels in the state who have required those sites to get a little bit, they can't only have tents, they need to have pods and all of these things. But the idea remains the same, which is under threat of criminal and civil penalties, like the one that the Portland City Council passed in May, under threat of $100 civil penalties and up to 7 days in jail, the city wants to move people off of land and in off of public spaces and into these areas without really having much of a say in, you know, what kind of happens there. They're supposed to get certain kinds of treatment. They're supposed to get these things that they need to get off the streets. But it's really coercive, and it's not necessarily the kind of thing that's going to be right for everyone. It's not an option that's going to work for everyone. So the rhetoric is very different, particularly from someone like the mayoral candidate and current city commissioner, Renee Gonzalez, who specifically said our once beautiful cities and state are overwhelmed by encampments. This sends a terrible national message about Oregon that anything goes on state and federal land. And the beginning of that very much sounds like Donald Trump saying our once great cities have become unlivable, unsanitary nightmares. So even some of the language is specifically the same. And the real thing here is that kind of regardless whether it's kind of a lighter rhetoric, you know, or something a little more heavy-handed like Donald Trump, the policy is essentially the same.
Well, it's important to look at this, right, because it's all in the aftermath of the Supreme Court decision in Grants Pass v. Johnson. How have things changed both at the federal and the local level since that came down earlier this year?
There have been a few things that are a direct result of that. You know, last week, California Governor Gavin Newsom required state agencies to move people off of state land, move encampments and clear them. There's photos of him doing it himself. And, you know, Mayor London Breed in San Francisco immediately followed and started giving people bus tickets out of town. In Oregon, it hasn't changed all that much in the sense that we have this state law, ORS 195-530, that says that policies regulating homelessness must be objectively reasonable. That is under threat, and that is something that certainly people like Gonzalez and Wheeler, Commissioner Dan Ryan, have all kind of called for, trying to address that in the next legislative session. And that's something that, you know, is really going to be, you know, a bit of a whirlwind, I think, in that next session, because with California, Washington, Idaho, you know, these cities and states trying to do everything they can to move people out of public spaces without providing them other options, you know, there's going to be, you know, a lot of stuff happening in Oregon.
To go back to the rhetoric briefly, there's a point that comes up multiple times in the article, which is that Portland City Commissioner Dan Ryan has this tendency to refer to people as quote unquote service resistant, and that is part of the justification for the strategies that the city has employed to try to address homeless encampments. And right, you talked about how those have kind of been tempered by restrictions that the state has put in place. Can you address kind of the service resistant, I guess, quote? What's going on there?
Yeah, the quote itself, you know, Commissioner Ryan, you know, said, told Coin 6 News, big challenge we continue to face is convincing those who refuse services to say yes and stop harming themselves and others in our city. He touts this service resistance thing a lot. And certainly there are people who do not want to go into shelters. It's really important to recognize what those shelters are. And sometimes this sort of paternalistic idea that, you know, that you sort of know what people need before they're happy to go into a shelter or willing to go into a shelter, you know, it's paternalistic. So it is sort of, you know, depending on the kinds of barriers that people have, you know, for some people, substance use disorders, maybe they're not ready. We also have to address the fact that there are not enough places for people to get treatment for substance use. There are people who have to line up at 6 a.m. outside of a place and hope to be one of the four people that they take in that day. So kind of until there's actually enough affordable housing, which, just for a statistic, per 100 rental households, Oregon has 44 available and affordable homes for people living below 50% median income, and they have just 26 for extremely low income households. So there's not enough affordable housing, and there's not enough treatment centers. This is part of what Measure 110 was doing, and that would be something that altogether could really start to address these interacting crises. And interrelated crises, and Oregon has kind of chosen to go back on those ideas rather than moving forward and or doubling down.
What do you hope listeners and readers take away from this story?
Well, it can be really confusing when we look at, you know, we talk a lot about red and blue and Democrats and Republicans in these sort of binaries, and people love to categorize things in binaries. It's really easy to change, you know, the color of your tie. But when it comes down to it, a lot of these policies are just really similar, punitive, paternalistic ideas. And it's the idea itself that is the problem. And, you know, there's a lot going on for people who are experiencing homelessness. And homeless people are not your stereotypes about them. And thinking about, you know, new ways that we can actually live in a society that provides the things that people need so that they don't end up on the street is something that, you know, some federal leaders are looking into, and hopefully we can see a bit of a more movement on the national scale.
Where can folks find a copy of this story?
The best place to get Street Roots is to buy a copy from a vendor. They're in your neighborhood and they accept cash, Venmo, and tips. You can also find us at streetroots.org.
Thank you so much, Jeremiah, for coming on KBOO News in Depth.
We love KBOO News in Depth. Thanks, Althea.
That was Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden speaking with me about his latest article. It's called Oregon congressional Democrats contrast local rhetoric, lead on housing initiatives. Senator Wyden, Representative Bonamici, and others urge Biden to act on affordable housing as local officials continue public space race to criminalize homelessness. More information on this story is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon,